It's the Deseret News Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 293, and I'm your host, Adam Mangum. In possibly the longest podcast we've ever recorded, Matt and I break down the tough loss against Louisiana State, and we preview the Utah game. Is the offense fixable? Who's going to run the ball? Who's going to catch it? It's Rivalry Week, and Matt and I break it all down for you. You can get this show and other great podcasts at DeseretNews.com/podcast. Like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/RiseAndShout. And listen to us yap about a lot of things right now. So Matt, we often get asked by folks, by the people, are we related to Tanner Mangum? So what do you usually say when people ask you if you're related to the BYU quarterback?
I say, well, we're probably related somewhere. Yes. I just have no idea where that is.
Yes, and I would say similar things, and I also say things like, you know, well, don't you see the athletic resemblance?
Aren't we all related? Aren't we all brothers and sisters?
I believe that's true. But Matt, your wife, who she has not asked a tweetback question in some time, so I'm a little disappointed by that fact. But
I don't know that she's been listening to the show.
That is probably true. She has discovered something. We are actually related to Tanner Mangum.
Yeah, so my wife is actually kind of into digging stuff like this up, and she was sick of the question. She finally had to know.
She had to know, and she found out that he's our brother. Just kidding. He's our long-lost brother.
Brothers don't shake hands.
Brother's got a hug. He is our third cousin, which means he shares with us a great-great-grandfather.
That's correct.
So will he be leaving tickets for us at Will Call at the next game?
I'm going to check just in case.
Yeah, there's a reason why you don't know your third cousins. I don't know.
Well, especially, like, you know, and I don't know if everybody's family's like this. I mean, how many third cousins do you think we have out there? A million?
Gosh, was that pre or post polygamy?
Yeah, exactly, right? So I'd have to go back and think about the years on this.
But there's
a lot of people that fit into that category. We should be just as athletically talented. I mean, essentially.
Well, I mean, I am.
It's all the same genes,
don't
right?
Don't sell yourself short. I mean, I once had 47 points in a church basketball game.
That's pretty good.
You found my old jersey. My church basketball jersey.
Oh, I need to ship that to you.
Yeah, I'm sure it...
I should tweet out a picture of that magic.
Yeah, we should tweet out a picture of that high school failure basketball player turns in... quite a performance in church ball.
Basketball tourney. Was that a tournament game or was that just regular season?
That was the championship of the Hingham Stake Young Men's League.
Who? What ward was the opponent?
The opponent was Newport, the Newport ward. Jared Cole. That was a tough ward
back in your time.
It was in my time. They had a guy that played for them who had been playing high school basketball and stopped, who was quite good, and he and I were trading baskets. I think basically I decided to put all of my good basketball playing into just one day.
It was a good choice. You picked the right day.
I picked the right day. So Matt, with that news that we're related to Tanner Mangum, let's jump into the CougarFan.com Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
Get all of your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. Matt, women's volleyball is headed to Hawaii.
Who doesn't want to go to Hawaii? I mean, seriously.
I'd like to go to Hawaii.
It's nice.
I don't play volleyball, though.
No, you don't play volleyball as well as you played that church basketball game, that's for sure.
No, that is most certainly for sure. So they'll be in the Hawaii Invitational coming up. I believe the first match is Thursday. Thursday through Saturday, they'll be placing... They'll be playing Hawaii and Nevada. So good luck to the BYU women's volleyball team. Matt, the soccer team is not going very well.
It's a tough schedule.
They were ranked when they started the season, but they're now 0-3-2. Utah's coming up on Friday, so hopefully they turn it around and kick the crap out of Utah on Friday.
I tell you what, I love it when as many teams as possible play Utah the same week or same weekend.
Well, and hopefully this time there won't be some cheap-shotting University of Utah player. Do you remember that video? She's like...
That's in New Mexico.
Is that New Mexico?
That really bad video where she's like pulling her down by the ponytails.
Oh,
and
that's not the University of Utah?
No, that's a New Mexico player.
I've been slandering the University of Utah for years.
No, let's at least be fair.
I don't know if we need to be fair. Matt, let's do it. It's rivalry week. And by the way, I just said that word right.
You did. Yeah. And it might be the only time you get it right the whole show. So revel in it.
Probably the only time I'm going to rival in it.
Now you ruined it. But seriously, let's get women's soccer. Go out there and get them, all right?
Yeah, go take them down. Take them down. Right the ship. There's still a lot of season to go. So,
and they're still a really talented team.
Yeah. Loaded. Good team. So, like you said, the schedule has been quite challenging to start. So, Matt, let's go to the Cougars in the NFL with the first pick in the NFL draft.
Sit down, Goodell.
The Los Angeles, one of the teams, pick. Matt, let's start with the Arizona Cardinals. Alani Fua is on injured reserve, so he will not be playing for them this year. On the Ravens, we have Kafusi, who didn't play last year, so he was hurt last year. He will be playing this year, and it looked pretty good in preseason. So I think he'll have a pretty good year. Over, under, 3.5 sacks for Kafusi.
Over. Write it down. Sharpie, over.
All right, over. I gotcha. Me too. I'll take the over. Robertson Daniel also on the Ravens, but he's on IR. Matt Kainakua did not make the 53-man roster, but was signed to the Cleveland Browns practice squad. He looked really good in the preseason. Seems like a very Browns thing to do, to take one of the top defensive back performers and put him on the practice squad.
The Browns got a Brown, you know what I mean?
That's what they got to do. Detroit Lions, Ziggy, of course, is on the team. Over, under 8.5 sacks for Ziggy.
Taking the over.
Me too.
I'm all about the Cougs in the pros right now.
Homers,
all about it.
Homers. Matt Jamal, of course, takes it. He's a hot
pickup.
Taking
the over. Sorry, you haven't given the stat yet.
Giving his stat. 2,000 yards.
I got to calm down.
Okay. He is a hot pickup right now in fantasy football. Jamal is. So I've seen it mentioned across the interwebs.
Very small bidding war erupted in our fantasy football draft the other night over Jamal.
True. That's true. Did he go for like $5? $4?
I think it was around $5.
Yeah, so in a $200 auction-style league. Matt, over, under 650 yards for Jamal Williams.
Oh, over.
I'm taking way over. I've been the guy that
said
he's
going. Yeah, they're going to go by committee at least there.
Yeah. Daniel Sorensen, of course, is on the Chiefs again. Had a really good year last year. Michael Davis did not make the 53-man roster for the Los Angeles Chargers, but is on their practice squad. Matt, this is a great story to me. He really struggled in his senior year. When he was a junior, I thought he was one of the best cover corners BYU had in my lifetime, and then he kind of fell off the map, and here he is, you know, an injury away from playing on Sundays. I think it's great that he's been able to make it.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool story, right? I mean, there's a little bit of self-realization there, figuring out who he needed to be.
Yeah,
I'd love to see him get a long-term shot somewhere.
Denny is, of course, the long snapper for the Dolphins again. That's been true for, I believe, 73 years now. He's been snapping
The merger.
Yeah, since the merger. The Patriots, Matt, have two Cougars.
Get me all the jerseys.
Kyle Van Noy, Harvey Longy will be playing together on that defense, and I think Longy's going to have an important role on the team. I mean, he's going to, I guess, 25-30% of the defensive snaps we'll see Longy on the field.
And his man bun.
And Kyle Van Noy, I think, is going to be massively involved this year, even more so than he was down the stretch, because now he knows the system.
Yes. And then, Kyle Van Noy's going to be a Patriot.
Oh, he is a Patriot. And much better. Sorry, Ziggy, you're stranded on the Lions.
That's really unfortunate.
That is unfortunate. Matt, in maybe the best news of the NFL preseason for Cougars, Taysom Hill is on a roster with the Gnarland Saints.
It's pretty crazy.
I mean, I didn't think he'd make one, honestly. But after his performance in the preseason, it kind of became he was going to at least be on somebody's practice squad.
I thought the Packers were going to really hold on to him. I thought they'd keep him on their 53.
Once they took him off the 53,
it was over.
Yeah, as soon as they said, I'm like, there's a really good chance somebody snags him just to put him on the roster and take a look at him over this season and see if he's more than just filler. And the Saints are that team because obviously they don't need a quarterback right now. So there's I don't know. I was going to look at the Saints depth chart, but I haven't looked at it. Who's the other quarterback on the roster?
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter?
Does it really, though?
I don't know. Does it matter?
I don't think it
does. Oh, Chase Daniel, the Missouri guy.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So it's Chase Daniel. So, obviously, Taysom Hill's not likely to play much this year, but this is a flyer to see if he's got potential, right?
Yeah, but nobody's looking at Chase Daniel as the future franchise quarterback in New Orleans either.
No, he's 30 years old. He's been a serviceable backup in a couple of spots.
He might be younger than Taysom Hill.
No, he is actually. I was looking that exact fact up because I thought that'd be pretty crazy. But he's only 3 years older than Taysom Hill, so keep that in mind. Kind of funny. And Drew Brees, of course, is 38, and his arm may fall off at any time. We hope it doesn't.
If it does, then I got rid of him in fantasy just in time.
Yes, you did. You did let go of him. You did let go of him. So, anyway, Matt, let's go and talk about you a little bit. And you're, 60 days away from running a marathon?
T-minus 60 days, baby. New York City, November 5th, 2017.
And tell us again for folks that maybe are new or just never paid attention, what you're doing it for and how they can help.
So I am running the New York City Marathon this year in as a way to remember our brother Mitch, who we lost 25 years ago, and raise money for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. So we'll have a link in the show notes where people can participate in the fundraising efforts for that. I've got about, in order to reach my goal, we've got about, I think, $2,200 left to go. And I have about 300 miles left to run before the race. So there's still a lot of work to do. I'll do all the running. If I can get a little bit of help with the other portion, I really appreciate the support.
You will do all the running. There is no doubt of that because I'm not doing any of it.
Yeah, it's a lot of running.
Hey, with this team that you're running with for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, will you run with them or meet them? Or is it just you guys are on a team?
So when I signed up, there was some talk about being available to do some things together, but nobody's mentioned anything yet. Huh. So I'd imagine at some point they're going to want to take a picture of us or something.
Oh, yeah,
but
yeah, right.
I don't think from what I've been able to gather, we're all kind of at different levels. So I don't know that we'll all be even in the same corral.
Yeah, because some of them are veteran.
Yeah, some of these people have run a handful of marathons.
Yeah.
I'm somewhere beyond, I'm somewhere behind that. I've run, 9 or 10 half marathons, but this is my first full. And then I think we've got a couple people that are just getting into running, or a little bit greener than me. But I mean, I'm pretty green, so.
Yeah, you are. It's not easy being green.
No, it's not.
Should I jump into my Kermit the Frog imitation, or?
Oh boy,
not appropriate.
Oh boy, that's never appropriate.
Why are there are so many? No?
No.
All right. No. People love
it. It used to be better.
Well, I don't do it as much anymore. All right?
No, you see, without practice, it's like a lot of things. You just lose it without practice.
That's true. Matt, third podcast in a row, we're going to talk about Francis Bernard. All right.
I mean, is there anything else to talk about?
Without going in, we recorded after the video before the video came out last week. The video that dropped. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this. I just think it's really strange to me that a video comes out on this right before the LSU game and 8 months after the event.
Yeah, it's just, the whole thing's just weird. It's just a weird story.
The whole thing's weird. And I think a lot of people have put this on Twitter. As bad as maybe he sounded on that video, I don't think any of us want to be judged by our worst day.
Fair enough. And I don't know if that's his worst day, right? You know what I mean?
Might not be. Yeah, I don't know.
But it's hard to take a six, seven minute snippet of somebody's life and try and make a decision about what kind of person they are.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? I just leave that up to somebody else to sort that out.
Yeah. I'm with you there. But the interesting part is you saw Francis Bernard on Saturday.
I sure did. It was pretty cool. We came out and we got into the stadium as soon as they opened the doors, and he's out there warming up with the team.
Yeah. So tell us about your experience. You took your son, went to the game. I mean, obviously we're going to get into the depressing result here in a minute, but how was the game experience on this hastily planned and moved New Orleans game?
We had a pretty good time. We decided to make a whole kind of – we were going to do a whole weekend trip before and see some family in Houston. But we decided that we were going to do, a little weekend just us. We got in New Orleans early, walked around the French Quarter a little bit, saw a bunch of other BYU fans, ran in a couple people I know, which is always cool at these games where we travel. And you remember we ran into a bunch of people at FedEx last year.
Yeah, quite a few.
Still missed my good friend Brent Fowler. We have attended the same game, I think, 3 years in a row and still not seeing each other. But anyway, we'll figure that out eventually. But, and sat at a restaurant, watched some games on TV, then headed over to the Superdome. Got in as soon as they opened up and got to watch the whole team warming up and coming in and out. And, my son got, Johnny Linehan slapped him five on his way back into the locker room after warming up, and
did he give any indication that he was going to run a all on his own fake punt?
You know, he was holding those cards pretty close to the vest. He didn't give that up in the pregame.
So let's just get this out of the way. Are you for or against his decision?
I'm not for his decision.
I am. Split,
but
I'm looking for a word that doesn't that I don't have to bleep myself out of. I love the guts.
There you go.
That took. Okay, I love the guts. Going against what your
the moxie.
Yes, going against what your coaches want as a punter, probably not the best idea.
Not a good look. It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see how it works out for him.
But wouldn't you have wanted to see Mangum go, we're staying on the field? Or like TJ Caroma just stand over the ball? No, I'm not coming off.
We're doing this.
Would you have felt differently about that versus what Johnny Linehan did?
I would have felt differently about somebody running an actual play out of the offensive playbook. But I look at what Linehan did. You know what? I think that developed. I think he had it in his head, but I think he made that decision on the fly, which was part of the problem.
Yeah. Decision making on the fly in that situation is not great.
But see, part of the reason you see this is the way that we're running punts with the rugby style kicker.
Yep.
He's going to take some few steps. He's going to take some time back there. And if they get some pressure on him, he's going to have to make a quick decision. And when you have to make quick decisions, you might not make the right choice 100% of the time.
Yeah. So, Matt, let's jump into this game, unless you have anything else about your experience that you wanted to share. Didn't want to preempt that.
I can get into kind of our experience post-game, maybe after we talk about the game, because that'll be a good way to bounce back from the depressing conversation we're about to have.
Yeah, but then we're going to talk about more depressing after that. But, it's a good counterbalance. We'll come up and down, up and down. So, Matt, first tweet bag question of the day.
Tweet bag.
This comes from Brian on Twitter at ZikaBob, which is a terrific handle. I don't know what it means, but that's
awesome.
Great, Brian. Disappointing loss to LSU. What are the best bounce back games in BYU football history? I don't know. It would take more research, but I thought of one. So I've got one. Matt, do you have any?
I thought of a couple, actually.
Okay,
go ahead.
All right, fire away. What do you got?
So one I had was in 2009.
Okay.
So in 2009, we had come off of, this is a little bit different than this situation, but we'd come off a big win against Oklahoma, big win at Tulane, and then a drubbing at the hands of Florida State.
Yeah.
Then came back, rattled off four straight wins. 42-23 win over Colorado State was the first one.
That's a good one.
But two or three, you know, three out of those four just really, you know, lesser opponents than what we're facing this week, but just really took it to some folks.
Right. That's a good one. That's a good one. Did you have another, or do you want me to go?
You go ahead, and I'll see if, and maybe I'll share the other one.
So mine was 1985. Okay, so year after the national championship, we are rolling, and massive upset with the with UTEP, who hadn't won a game. So think about that for a second. Okay.
Ouch.
They were one of the worst teams probably in college football that year, and they beat us. The next game we come and obliterate Wyoming 49-0. So you look at that and you say, wow, you know, like that's a bounce back game. And I'm sorry, we weren't undefeated. We had lost to UCLA early in the season and kind of fallen down in the rankings, but we were back up to seventh in the country when we lost to UTEP. So, and Wyoming that year, by the way, was not good. They were 2-6, so it's not as if we beat a good team on a bounce back, but we left no doubt beating Wyoming. I'm sorry, I think I said 49-0, 59-0, and then beat Utah State the next week, 44-0. So, and then a week after that, beat Air Force, who was ranked fourth in the country, and I think was undefeated that year when we beat Air Force. So, yeah, that was the only loss Air Force had the entire year was to us. So there you have it, Matt. Anyway, great question. Great question, Brian. Moving on, Tim Jacobson asked this. Oh, and by the way, Brian used hashtag still hope, hashtag tweetbag, and hashtag climb on in. We're going to see climb on in quite a bit today. The people are loving your climb on in garbage. Wherever
climb on in. Climb on in.
All right. Tim Jacobson asked via Facebook. I think it was Facebook. Tim, did you send this via email? I don't know. Whatever. You sent it in. After Saturday, which coach, player, group of players do you point to that contributed most to the loss? Tim says Mike Empey and Tuiaki because of the line play. What do we say, Matt? I don't know. The whole offense, can I pick that? Bushman?
I'm not ready to pin the offensive woes on the offensive line just yet.
I'm getting pretty close. I don't know if I'm with you. I'm not going to pin it all on them. But they have not looked good in two straight games, and one of those was against Portland State. So I'm a little worried about the offensive line. We'll get to that in a minute. But is there any particular person or coach that you think is most to blame, or do you think there's enough blame to go around?
I think there's plenty of blame to go around, but I think at the end of the day, you have to say we couldn't, you know, is it the running backs and Ty Detmer?
I mean, it's hard to blame the running backs when they touch the ball like 10 times. Right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, any even good running backs against a good defense, you give them that small sample of size, you might have very few yards, right? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I mean, they didn't look terrible against Portland State. They looked okay. I didn't see this coming. Neither of us saw that egg being laid.
No, I didn't expect the rushing attack to be that bad.
No. I mean, I wasn't super excited about it, but I wasn't... Well, let's get on. So what's going on with the offense? Brian Taylor had a lot to say. Twitter, Facebook, You know, I think he flew He's bringing it from all angles.
Smoke signals.
Smoke signals, all of it. So on Facebook, Brian said, is Ty Detmer running the right scheme offensively at BYU with this pro-style offense? Okay? No, he is not. Matt?
Correct. He is not.
He's not. There's a reason, and Jeff Johnston pointed this out on Saturday night, there's a reason why teams don't run this, especially teams that are going to maybe be athletically less than some of the competition, like a top 10 team in LSU. So anyway, we'll get back to Detmer here in a minute, because then he says on Twitter, and that's at Boozer Taylor, Brian says, to me, you had your doubts about Detmer from the beginning. I remember those in the first few podcasts in the early 2016. Matt, we're 15 games in. Detmer's offense is not good. Just isn't. I mean, just statistically speaking, it's not a very good offense. We are below average offensively since he took over. I'm not saying that's all his fault. I'm not saying he should be fired or anything like that. But we're 15 games in, and I have to say, this offense, it's not good. It's unimaginative. It doesn't play on the strengths we have relative to other people. Doesn't seem to worry about matchups whatsoever, ever. We just run plays as if there's not a defense on the other side that may be trying to counter him. I'm just not impressed. I'm not saying fire Detmer, but I mean, do you have any counter argument? Do you think I'm being unfair?
No, I think there's a couple things that are really clear, and you hit one of them right on the head. We're not playing to the strengths of the athletes we have on the offensive side of the football right now. And that's a criticism of Anai at times. And I think a lot of teams probably feel this way about their offensive coordinator at least every once in a while. But clearly we're not playing to the strengths. And I think that, I don't know if it's a timing issue or some other things, but the way the offense is, the offense we're trying to run right now isn't the right fit.
Yeah, it's just not working right now. I mean, clearly. When you have that terrible, terrible game against Portland State, but here's the thing. We haven't had a good offense in years. We just haven't. I mean, even a nice second, the go fast, go hard, his offensive from before he left for Arizona were way better. Now, the argument could be, well, you had better players to run the offense, and that may be true. But the flip side is, in the end, we've had pretty mediocre offenses for a while. I mean, so again, maybe it's not all on Detmer. Maybe we just haven't recruited well enough and coached well enough in the past to have a top offense. What do you think of that potential argument?
I think, if you look at the personnel a little bit, right, as far as recruiting is concerned, Tanner Mangum's a pretty highly regarded recruit.
Highly regarded, yes.
But I think what we're learning at some of these other skill spots is we don't have a Tanner Mangum at some of these other positions. There's not an Austin Colley in this receiver's core.
No.
There's not a Jamal or a Harvey. Or insert name here, right? I mean, you've got your favorite guys that you like to throw in, but there's just not one of those guys. And so I think that's part of the issue.
So we'll get to this in a second, Matt, but right now I only see one weapon that Tanner has throwing the football.
And he's one. He's a big freshman.
He's a big freshman tight end. I mean, maybe Shumway's another one, maybe. But nobody else at this point in two games in. Small sample size. One of them was against FCS, and one of them was against maybe could end up being a top five defense in college football this year, right? So we may see something different emerge. But right now I'm not sitting there thinking, wow, what weapon will he choose today? I'm thinking,
yeah, but
once they double Bushman, what the heck is who's he going to throw to?
Well, but to be fair, right, and I think there is something we'd all need to maintain some level of perspective here. this defense that we're playing, this team we played last week, might be the best team we face all year.
I think there's a very high likelihood they're the best team we play all year. It's and either likely, them or Wisconsin.
And likely has more speed on defense, even though they were missing several players, has more speed on defense than any team we're going to play. So their ability to lock our receivers down and not anybody get open shouldn't – I mean, we shouldn't be ready to burn down the barn over what we saw last weekend.
No, the offense will not be that bad all year. The problem is I don't have a lot of faith that they'll be very good, though, either.
And the second scary – so I if you look at the LSU game in isolation, I feel like it was a really good team. And the final score was fairly close to what you and I both predicted, except I thought we might get the ball across the 50 and score, which we did not.
I just assumed, if nothing else, the LSU defense would just, you know, not play as hard, right? It's natural.
Well, I thought for sure at halftime we could come out in the second half, if we could come out in that first possession, make some adjustments, get down the field and put some points on the board, we'd be in the game. So all was not lost at halftime, but it felt like it was, which was a little disconcerting.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure.
If you back up and not look at this game in isolation, the thing that makes you nervous is that we also had a hard time creating separation against Portland State.
But again, I said this last week, those two cornerbacks are probably, let's rank all the cornerbacks we're going to play this year, they're probably two of the best six we'll play all year. And I'm not exaggerating, the Portland State corners. So
maybe we got into this last week, but
you don't believe me. But that guy from Oregon, he shouldn't be playing at Portland State. You know, he has no business playing there. So I mean, anyway, the point is, they've had trouble getting open 2 weeks in a row. So let's dive into this a little bit more. People are asking us, how do we fix it? I feel like I've been trying to answer that question for a year and a half. So Spencer Lindemann says, that's at the LDS SDL, how do we fix the dang offense? Gary Payne, that's at FastBreakGP on Twitter, why don't we run a pass every play? Maybe mix in a draw play here and there. Running versus the U may result in the same as LSU. It could be like a tribute to Lavelle. And then in a subsequent tweet, he said, oh yeah, hashtag tweetbag, hashtag painbag. Matt, I don't know how to fix it. I honestly don't. I've thought of things and I got nothing.
Well, I think the formula that defenses are going to look at right now is to load up the box, because we're not creating holes for running backs. And if you've got decent speed in your defensive backfield and you can keep up with our receivers, then you don't need a whole bunch of defensive backs back there either. And so it puts you in a position to cover both of those things. So whatever it is that we come up with has to be something to counter those two things. And load up the box isn't quite the right phrase. But I don't know that anybody's looking at our running attack right now and getting very nervous. So it allows them to do some things up against the – I guess this is the better way to say what I'm trying to say. It allows them to do some things in pass defense that is going to make it very difficult for us to move the football.
Yes, and they also, if they believe they can lock down and man coverage, then they can also blitz Tanner.
Exactly.
I mean, there's if you can't run the football and you can't beat one-on-one coverage on the outside as wide receivers, you leave your quarterback very vulnerable.
Especially if your offensive line struggles picking up the blitz.
Especially if that is the case. Matt, so let's talk about Tanner. A couple of tweetbag questions on Tanner that are basically the same, but I'm going to read both of them because that's the kind of guy I am. On Facebook, Randy Whittle says, why does Tanner Mangum look more like he just got off his mission this year than he did 2 years ago? And my friend Seth Lewis asks, Tanner Mangum seemed to be a more accurate, more comfortable QB fresh off his mission 2 years ago. How is that possible? Matt, with all this talk of the offensive line, accurate, running backs, accurate, wide receivers, accurate, Tanner also missed some wide-open dudes. Did not move off of his first read a couple of times when there were people wide open. The announcers mentioned it. Heck, Detmer mentioned it today during his press conference, that and took the blame himself, that he was trying to maybe focus Tanner on a few things. So Matt, what I think this is true. He does not look like the quarterback he was 2 years ago.
Yeah, he seems like he's pressing a little, is what it looked like to me Saturday night. And it's, some of his fundamentals are off. I think his footwork didn't look really good on Saturday night. And the way he was leaning with his shoulders when he was throwing the ball didn't look good. And his elbow drop looked bad. And these weren't things that I remember seeing. Maybe I need to go back and look at some film from a couple of years ago. But the technical things behind what he's doing don't look good right now. And the placement of the ball is being impacted as a result. You know, he's throwing behind guys. He's throwing at people's feet. The trajectory of several of those passes, especially, you know, in the 10 yard range, those passes were dropping in a hurry. And I don't know if that was because the window that he was throwing into against the LSU defense was a lot smaller than the window he's trying to hit against Portland State, as good as your favorite defensive backs in FCS are. the window was a lot smaller, and so, you know, I wonder if he was just trying to squeeze that ball in there and put it in a place where he knew it wasn't going to get picked off, but it was also a place where it was a lot harder for his guys to catch it.
Okay, so I wanna dispel a couple of things. All right, I think everything you said is accurate. All those things worry me. Tanner was not accurate in 2015. He was 12 of 29 against Boise State. 12 of 28 against Michigan, which, by the way, probably next to this LSU team, is the best defense we've played in 20 years. That Michigan team. Remember how bad that one was? How bad that felt? Then he had good games, completion percentage-wise, against UConn, East Carolina, Cincinnati, Wagner, San Jose State. And then Missouri, we were there. He missed some guys in that game. They also had some fast guys on the outside. And then Utah State and Utah, he struggled in the completion percentage. I think we're misremembering his 2015 season, honestly. It was a very good season. I'm not trying to take anything away from it. I just don't think he was Max Hall or Ty Detmer in 2015. And that's almost kind of, I think, how we remember him, because he won those two games to start off, and he had a good year. He had a very good freshman year, but I don't know that he's playing that much differently than he played in 2015. I mean, the Portland State game's weird, but him having a bad game against a really, really good LSU defense, he was not good against Michigan. He was terrible. You know, got sacked three times, didn't throw any interceptions, but couldn't complete a pass. So I don't know. What do you think of that?
Maybe there is something there. I mean, but come on, Hail Mary, Adam.
The problem is you have to stay close enough to get a chance at a Hail Mary, right? Which, right, against LSU, there was not going to be any chance of that.
What I'd be interested in seeing is an analysis of, and maybe I could have dug this up before we recorded, but I'm just thinking about it now while we're talking, is his accuracy at different spots in the field, right? So,
inside, oh, my 15, friend. I've, you know, got
15 yards or shorter of a pass, 20-yard passes, you know, to which side of the field, over the middle. I think if you have a good analysis there, you can start doing some things. Because I believe there are answers. There are things we can do with the players we have on offense right now that I believe will give us an opportunity to recover here.
Yeah, so BYU stats man, okay? I got to get his 2015 numbers. I've got 2016 and 2017. He breaks this all down, okay, and shows you distance, wide receiver, all that stuff, left, middle, right. So far this year, he's 50% to his left, 75% to the right, and 48% completion to the right. So middle has been middle of the field. I'm sorry, I said that wrong. 50% to the left, 48% to the right, 75% to the middle.
Okay. And when you think about it, that seems to make sense, right?
That's where
Bushman
is.
When you think about some of the big plays and who the receivers are that he's hitting, that seems to make sense.
Yeah, yeah. So again, this is two games, and we'll look, as the season goes on, I will be referencing his numbers. He's been played You know, under center shotgun, it's been about the same distance, though. Here's the thing. 20-plus yards, he's 2 for 6. 10 to 19 yards, he's 5 for 14. It's basically his sweet spot has been short passes so far, which is not historically what he's done. So anyway, Matt, it's a little disconcerting. 0 to 10, 10 being super worried, 0 you're not worried at all. How worried are you about Tanner Mangum?
Oh, I'm at an 8.
I'm at like a 7 or 8. Yeah. I'm probably in the same spot.
But there's stuff you can do based on what we just walked through, the analysis that you just showed us, right? From BYU Stats Man. And what we know about personnel, there are things we can do here that will make this offense work.
Yeah.
I think so. If you spread some guys out, okay? You try and what you need is you need to continue to create the mismatch with Bushman on a safety, because that was even working against LSU. You know, so I think you've got to get short passes on quick routes and slants and things that do well against man, and just kind of dink and dunk the ball down the field. And as you start to do that successfully, you're going to force the defense to make some adjustments.
Right.
And then you've got an opportunity to start opening things up a little bit and trying some other things. But I would not try and use the run to set up the pass. I would set Mangum back there in a shotgun and maybe put one running back there with him. And if there's not a blitz to pick up, that running back goes. And try and hit people, you know, two, maybe three, you know, just real quick type of passes and see if you can get some momentum going that way. But I think that's what you've got to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. So Matt, let's move on to the running backs. Riley Burt, out of nowhere to me, was moved to cornerback. Wasn't he the number two guy coming out of fall camp? Wasn't that the storyline, that it went Squally Canada and Riley Burt?
Yeah, but we've got dominoes.
Yeah, I get it. We have dominoes. How many carries has Riley Burt had so far this year? Trivia question for you.
Yeah, I'm going with
0. No. Right? 0 carries. So I'm confused. I get it. There's dominoes falling. It just doesn't. It's just weird to me that Burt all of a sudden's a defensive back. Weird. So
is this going to be one of those things where later on we find out the full story?
I'm sure it is.
Doesn't it seem like that to you?
Well, I mean, the coaching staff, people used to hammer Bronco and his staff for being closed mouth on things. I'm sorry, Bronco was way more open about this stuff than Kalani and his staff is. I don't know. I still, Tua Tagovailoa was mentioned by Sataki that he'll be ready to go for the Utah game. Did you have any idea he wasn't ready to go for the LSU game?
Yeah, I don't know what that. We're still not sure what that means. He looked ready to go to me.
So I don't know. So Hector Lives, that's at Naletto, says, should fans be pining for Burt at running back, or should we rest assured that the coaches know better than we do? Hashtag armchair coach. Hashtag climb on in. Hashtag tweetbag. And then Brian, that's at 49er Coug, says, after LSU, I'm a little concerned about depth at running back. Is Burt so not ready at running back that they moved him to cornerback? I have no idea how to answer either of these questions.
Guys, a little bit concerned. A little bit concerned.
Yeah, I'm very concerned. I mean, KJ Hall left hurt. Don't know if he'll play, though Sataki seemed to kind of blow that off as not a big deal. Fanua was hurt, though he also, Sataki, kind of blew that off as like he'll be back. And then Tua Tagovailoa, who we didn't even know was hurt, apparently will be ready for Utah. So Matt, here's the only thing. Let's hand the rock to Tua Tagovailoa for 15 carries on Saturday. Can we just do that?
Let's just give the kid the keys. He's the running back of the future, isn't he?
I think so. I mean, but to be fair to Canada, 20 carries for 103 yards this year is not atrociously bad. Except for the fact that one of those games was Portland State, right?
And that's where most of that yardage comes from.
Almost all of it. You know, and Fanua has looked a little better on 10 carries, though. I mean, and basically we're looking at two long runs for Fanua. against Portland State, because he didn't do anything against LSU either. So I don't know. Tulatau's got one carry for 3 yards. I mean, Trey Dye was lining up as the halfback on Saturday. And that's why it's weird to me that we're moving a guy to defense back from here.
It seems to me like there is more information there than we know.
It's different.
This is going to be one of those things where a year from now there's going to be some story and we're going to find out what really happened. Because on the surface, it doesn't seem to make any
sense.
Seems strange.
So, Matt, for the wide receivers, I'm just throwing my hands up. I have no idea. I have no idea what to do with the wide receivers. I don't know, like you said, I don't know if we have a single playmaker in the bunch.
Well, I mean, one of the things that really chapped my hide the other night was Bo Tanner on the interception. When that ball's underthrown, you are now a defensive back. You have to make sure that defender doesn't come down with that pass.
It's
a team sport, man.
Here's my gripe against the announcers, which I thought they were fine. They clearly had not watched a lot of tape of BYU, to be honest, because they kept saying stuff like, you know, about this. But that's who they want, Bo Tanner running that route. Really? That's who they want running that route? That deep route? Now, granted, it was underthrown, and you're absolutely right. He has to turn into deep back and not kind of float out of bounds. But that's who you want?
That's not who we want running that route.
That's not who I want running that route. Like, Treneman's supposed to be the speed guy.
I want Treneman running that route.
The question, though, is after Treneman, did you want any maybe Trey Dye splitting out? I don't know if I want anybody else running that route against a good defensive back. One-on-one.
And defenses know that.
I know. It's not good. And you can't blame that on Tanner, though that throw was underthrown. So that, I guess you can blame on Tanner.
But that wasn't entirely his fault, too. I mean, there were some protection issues on that play
when
he stepped into his pass.
Yep. I know. It's a team game, right? It's hard to pen things one or the other. Matt, 0 to 10 concern on the offensive line. 10 being super concerned, 0 being everything's great.
8.
I'm a 9. This is the play for me is more about what happened against Portland State than it is about what happened against LSU. But LSU just made me feel even worse, I guess, about it. But I thought this was going to be the strength of our unit. I thought, we've got inexperienced running backs and maybe just a wide receiver core that's not up to where we want it to be, but the offensive line will make up for that. The answer is, through two games, not really.
Now, and again, I can't defend the Portland State game, but I think we've got to keep in mind that is the best defensive line we're going to play all year.
And one of the best defensive lines, to be honest, that BYU may have played in school history. And I'm not I'm not trying to be, hyperbolic.
It's an extremely talented group.
Well,
and against that group, they had some flashes of, putting a pocket together, and some other things. So, I'm concerned, but I'm not ready to. Like I said, I'm not ready to burn down the barn just yet.
I'm a little worried about the play at right tackle. Honestly, I think we may see some other guys get a shot on that side of the ball this Saturday. I won't be surprised. There were some one-on-one problems in both the games. So we'll see. Schoff looks small, but he seems to be doing fine. Does he look small to you?
Yes.
When he's out there? But he seems to be holding his own. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. So Matt, Sataki basically kind of took it to the offense and said changes have to come. Do you expect to see a massively different scheme and or players on Saturday against Utah?
I don't know if I'd use the word massive, but I absolutely expect to see different personnel on the field, and I absolutely expect to see a different look of a scheme. And what we didn't see at all this last Saturday night was a strategy, an approach, an identity. Whatever the word is you want to use, you didn't see any of that. Was that a function of the fact that they just couldn't get anything together and stay on the field long enough to build any momentum? Or was it that the team doesn't know who they are and they are a little lost? think it's probably a little bit of a combination of those two things. And sometimes you have to, you know, take a shot on the chin before you kind of figure out who you are and what you're made of and what works and what doesn't. And it puts you in a position where you have to abandon the things that don't work and develop the fortitude to try some stuff that you might not have otherwise. And that's what I expect us to see this weekend. We've talked about some of those things already. Tolu Lutau, I think, is going to get the rock. I think we're going to see a bunch of him. Now, has he been hurt? Has that been the issue? Apparently.
News to me.
Offensive line, I would imagine there will be some rotation of personnel at the offensive line. We might not see the same guys that we've been seeing. Do I expect us to go heavy on Bushman? Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I expect them to figure out ways to get him mismatched or open, even in short yardage situations. And instead of using him as a check down where he's the second or third or further read, because that's part of the issue here offense that we're running here is the progression that Tanner's having to work through. And it's not something that he's used to doing. And I don't think it plays to his skill set. And I also don't think it plays to the skill set of the receivers, the way that the progressions are set up.
So eight of the 23 pass plays, Bushman was targeted, but only twice in the second half.
And he's going to Bushman quick.
Yes.
Because these other guys are locked down. So if that's true and you can create the right mismatches, then let's play to that strength. The kid's got some hands and he's a big guy. Let's give him the football over the middle. You know, or even streaking over to that right side, because that seems to be where Tanner's the most accurate.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so there's some things that we can do here to take advantage of what we've got, and I absolutely expect Detmer to make those adjustments. I think the message was pretty clear from the head coach.
So, yeah. Treneman, how many targets he had against LSU?
I don't know the answer to
that. This number blew me away. Zero.
Yeah. I don't think he was ever really open.
It's kind of crazy to me that's the case. I know he only had like one catch against Portland State, but Matt, we haven't even talked about the Utah game yet, and we're 51 minutes in to recording. So we're going to run a little long, folks. It's rivalry week.
Buckle up, Buttercup.
That's right. Matt, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this one. Paul Andrew Schumann asked this on Facebook. How does the role of a fan differ from that of a critic, and how can fans best support the team? In the modern age of social media, Matt, that question seems to be maybe a little different than it was 30 years ago. But Matt, what's the difference between a critic and a fan? And does that even something you think about?
Well, I'd say this. I think there's a couple of basic things that we all hopefully understand about, you know, how you can be a fan. Now, as a fan, are you sometimes going to be critical of a team's performance? Yeah, I think you are.
I think that's fine, by the way. I don't have any issue
that's
with that.
And I think that's part of what we've done here during this conversation. But let me throw this out there. Let me just tell this story real quick. So after the game, Saturday night, I'm at the game with my 12-year-old son. And at the end of the game, all he wants to do is he wants to go down to the bar, to the fence or whatever, because he knows some of those players are going to come over and they're going to give five to fans or sticking their arms out. Now, not all the players came over, and I understand why not. You know, they're extremely frustrated. They've had a long night, and I don't begrudge them for that. I really don't. But several of the players did. Some big name players did. And came over and you know, gave them people five, and the crowd started chanting "Beat Utah." And as the crowd dissipated, my son's just trying to drink in, you know, the whole experience. So we stayed until security kicked us out. We may have been the last two people to leave the Superdome. And we're standing there while they're interviewing Butch Powell on BYU TV. And they eventually came out like, you guys got to leave. But if you want to see the players, they're all exiting out of Gate G. So we went over to Gate G where they were loading the buses, and there's nobody there, just people loading buses. And my son wants to stand there until the whole team is loaded up on the bus, and every time any BYU players come out, he wants to yell, you know, go BYU, go Cougs, and clap for these players, because that's his team. Now, is he disappointed in the way that the game worked out? Yeah. Is he going to spend a week at school, in middle school at Baton Rouge, dealing with the aftermath of this game? Yeah. Is that anything like the emotions that the players are feeling? No, it's not. But is he disappointed? Did he wish the things would have worked out better? Yeah. But does he love that team? Is he going to stand and cheer for that team? Is he still begging me to drive him to Starkville in a couple weeks to see them play Mississippi State? Absolutely. And I think that's the balance, right? Is we can understand that things didn't go well and talk about the things that could be improved, but at the same time, like, let's not try and tear anybody apart. If you're tweeting at a player specifically calling him out,
you're like, an idiot.
You're dumb.
You're an idiot.
If you're screaming at this point for a coach to be fired, like, you need to calm down.
Hey, I am not. We've already talked about this. I'm not convinced Detmer is the right guy. But you don't fire somebody after 15 games, right?
Especially after you played one of the best teams in the country.
Yeah, it's too much of a knee jerk reaction. And the thing is, Satake and Detmer are not cooking with their own groceries. And because of BYU and the missions, they're not going to be for a long time. So, you know, like, ease up. I'm totally with you. I'm totally with you. That's a great way to illustrate it. So, the rivalry, Matt, you ready to talk about the rivalry?
Oh, let's do this.
Said it like four times in a row correctly, not like Elmer Fudd.
Let's do this.
All right. Alex Weir on Twitter says this. Why can't we all just get along? Maybe the blue and red can hug, and then we will all be Weber State fans. I think we can all agree, even us with the Utah fans, we don't want to be Weber State fans. Sorry, bro.
Yeah, this seems like such a reach. I feel like we could unite and not cheer for Weber State.
Yeah, yeah.
That seems like a much more likely scenario than let's unite and then also cheer for all of the – what is this? Like, what is this? Like, we're going to start chanting Utah schools instead of SEC?
Yeah,
this doesn't make any sense to me. Sorry, well, I'm lost, Alan. I'm not following the logic.
This is a perfect lead-in to Weber State graduate Brett Hine at BHine3, who's a former guest on this podcast. Brett says, what is the best kind of food and beverage for LDS BYU fans to consume after losing a rivalry game? Now, Brett, are you assuming we're going to lose this game? Because I resent that implication. I resent it.
Yeah.
And if it happens, eat blue food. Blueberries.
Milkshakes.
Blue milkshakes,
baby. Milkshake, that's the ultimate. That is the ultimate.
That's the ultimate consolation food.
It works in both scenarios.
It does. Win or lose.
You go out, you win this game, I'm going to celebrate with a milkshake. Oh, you know what? The Jay Keeps fumble 52-10. Well, I guess I'll have a milkshake. You see, it's a winner either way, and you get a milkshake.
It's true. It's true. I would also say any kind of pie.
Pie. I take pie.
I'm a big fan of pie, and so I also think that any kind of pie would also be a good choice. But that's just me. So Andre Hutchins, that's on Facebook, he asks, is crying an acceptable emotion to experience this weekend, win or lose? Or how about punching walls? Crying is fine. And he did a gif of who's the character on The Office? It's Andy Bernard punching the wall and breaking his hand. Don't punch any walls, Andre.
Yeah, that's ill-advised unless you know exactly where the studs are or you can do your own sheetrock. I wouldn't
don't do
it.
So, Matt, the big thing that's coming out from a lot of folks, fans, writers, is this the most important game left on the schedule for BYU? Now that LSU has come and gone, is this it?
Go ahead.
You and I don't live in Utah. To me, it is not the most important game. I don't have to listen to a bunch. If we lose, I don't have to listen to a bunch of Utah people gripe at me for a year that it's now 7 years in a row. It is probably the second most. I still think Wisconsin, I know people think I'm crazy. If we lose this week and beat Wisconsin, Wisconsin's victory, that becomes legend. The Utah game becomes a footnote. The loss. Do you remember in 2009, did we beat Utah or not? Do you remember that we beat Oklahoma?
Right.
I'm just saying.
Well, I'll say this, right? I'm friends with a couple of Utah fans that I've met over the years in places we've lived. I keep in touch with on social media.
I'm sorry to hear that.
People are going to harass me if we lose this game Saturday, right? Because I don't get into the Twitter banter with strangers that are Utah fans
because
I just
don't care.
I don't yeah, it really has no impact on my life. But I am going to take what you just said and flip it.
Okay.
If we win this game and lose to Wisconsin, it's not going to make me feel any better about the Wisconsin loss.
Yeah, sure. But I want to win on Saturday. I mean, Utah's a good team. They're our rival. Let's go kick the crap out of them, right? Like,
and let's bounce back from this.
Yeah,
I feel like this LSU game, I mean, listen, guys. I mean, it was one of the best teams in the country. We lost. We got beat in some ways badly. But let's come back, and we got a game at home against a team with whom we have some history. Let's bounce back, and let's put a W up on the board. Let's do this.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're not going to spend a lot of time, by the way, breaking down the University of Utah players and such. You guys all are probably reading the same stories we are, so we're not going to spend a lot of time on that. We will talk about the QB situation here in a minute because, you know, they've got a new QB, and last week was interesting in their game against North Dakota to break some of that down. We'll get to that in a second. James Lowe asks on Facebook, and you may have already kind of answered this, would beating Utah this week wash that bad taste out of our mouth from the LSU game, or we're going to have that all season regardless of Saturday's outcome? If we beat Utah on Saturday, everyone's going to forget about the LSU game.
Everybody moves on.
Everybody will move on. If we lose, it's like a cascading effect of crappiness.
Oh, it's bad. The state of the fan
is bad.
After a potential loss this weekend is not good.
Nobody may download us next week because they won't want to hear anybody talk about it.
Well, I'm a little bit worried that at least one guy's going to break his hand.
Yeah, well, Andre, be careful. You need to save that hand for your beef with Matt.
That's right, because at some point we're going to shake hands.
I thought you were going to throw down. That's
not
what kind of beef
this is. No, we're not going to throw down.
Oh.
Come out to Starkville. We'll shake hands.
It's not nearly as exciting. So, Matt, last week they played North Dakota. Okay? So they get a game against a FCS opponent. They lead only, 16-9 at halftime? I think was the, 17-9 at halftime, and then end up winning 37-16. Tyler Huntley, the new quarterback, looked okay throwing the ball. Very safe passing, had an interception. 18 carries for 70 yards. Matt, how worried are you about this new quarterback and his ability to move?
We always struggle with that. We have a hard time with it.
We often do.
But you know when we've done better with it? Is when we've had extremely athletic linebackers. Big, fast, football smart guys.
I got one word for you. Hadley.
Well, and Warner.
And Warner, yep.
So I still believe in our linebackers. I really do. And I think that we have the right personnel that we can probably bottle this guy up.
Okay, now people have given a lot of flack. Some folks have given flack to the defense for their play against LSU, particularly in the running game. Okay, let me put something into perspective here. Geis, okay, 27 carries for 125 yards, 4.4 yards per carry. You know who couldn't keep him to that yards per carry number? Almost anybody in the SEC last year. I'm not saying we have an elite run defense, but Utah is not going to run the football on us like they did against North Dakota. I don't believe
run deep. Run defense isn't our problem. Defense in general isn't the problem.
Isn't our problem. Now, the pass game, they have a couple of fast wide receivers. Carrington last week, 10 catches for 127 yards and a touchdown. Covering him one-on-one, and that's one thing I wish Tuiaki would do. Can we just put Troy Warner on their best wide receiver? That's what I would do. But that's just – and it was true and it's true a lot of college teams don't do that. Because it messes up the scheme, right? And it puts people on the other side of the field, and I get that. But man, it'd be nice if our best one-on-one coverage guy could go against their best one-on-one guy.
You have to have some real depth in your defensive backfield to pull that off, or you end up leaving some guy on an island who's just not
who's not ready.
You're
going
to be ready to do that.
Yeah, for sure. So anyway, that's probably a terrible idea. But anyway, I think the real question is, how good is Utah's defense? Now, I saw this on, I think it was I forget which blog I was reading today, and so I can't reference, but I'm going to mock them, so it's probably better. They said that this Utah is going to be the second best defense that we play this year. Whoever wrote that is probably not following the honor code and its use of illicit drugs.
Wow.
Wisconsin was a top freaking 10 defense last year. Top 10. Utah's defense was like top 50 last year. They are not as good last year. Now, the years before that, they were top 25. Okay. And some years even better than that. And could they be returning to that this year? Possible, but they lost some guys to the next level in graduation. I think they've got a good defense. It's not going to be anywhere near as good as what we saw on Saturday, nor will it be as good as what we see the next week.
Yeah, so, I think if you rank our defenses, you have the top two we're going to play all year in LSU and Wisconsin. Then you have a steep drop-off, and Utah's somewhere shortly after that.
Yeah, and they're good. Meant no disrespect to Utah. I mean, honestly, they will be, like you said, probably the third best defense. And after them, it might be a huge drop off to the next team. I don't know if you paid attention to everybody's first week results on our schedule. It is very likely that we end up playing four or five of the worst 10 teams in America this year.
I mean, but it's going to feel great at the end of October, right?
Oh, Mangum's stats are going to look fantastic. In that stretch, the whole team's going to look great in that stretch, because we're going to play some teams that probably are worse than Portland State. Towards the end.
Yikes.
Of the year. Back to Utah though, Matt. So how does BYU win this game? A game in which BYU wins? What two or three things happen in that game, in that scenario?
I think you got to get pressure on this quarterback. You keep him in a box. You bottle this guy up, and you get some pressure on him from the defensive line, and you contain him from making plays with his feet with some good, sound linebacker play. I think we've got the defensive back to deal with these guys. But I think if you do that, you put yourself in a position to win this football game, because this defense we're up against is not – it's not LSU.
No, it is not LSU. And – I think to add to what you said, because I completely agree, I think there has to be a couple of turnovers from the defense. I think an interception or two, maybe a fumble, is going to be a big part of it. On the offensive side, Matt, I think what you have to see is we got to spread out and throw the football, quick hitting passes, get some things going in the middle of the field to open up the deep game. Yes, I'm going to go with Gary Payne here. I think your pass to run ratio has to be 60 to 40, 65 to 35. I think you got to attack this defense through the air. I don't know that we have the horses this year. And like you said, if Tulu Tau doesn't touch the ball 10 to 15 times, I'm going to be disappointed some way or another. But you know, if we win and he only touches it three times, I'm not going to be complaining after the game. So Matt, Tanner passing yards. Let's do a little over under, okay? Tanner passing yards. All right, you ready?
Oh, I'm ready. Oh, I'm ready.
All right. So Tanner passing yards, 265. Taking the over or the under?
I'm taking the under.
I'm taking the over.
Attaboy.
That's what I just said. That's what I just said. Matt, total offense for BYU, 453 yards. I'm taking the over.
Taking the under.
Total offense for the University of Utah, 453 yards.
I'm also taking the under.
I'm taking the under as well. Matt, you may know where I'm going with all this. Utah is favored right now by 1.5 on the road. Are you taking Utah or are you taking BYU in that scenario?
Taking the Cougs, baby.
I'm taking the Cougs. Matt, it sounds like we're both picking the Cougs to win.
Yes, sir.
And we
yes,
are.
Yes, sir. It is a Cougar victory this weekend. And I know everybody's discouraged about what happened last week, but I'll tell you, this is a team that's ready to bounce back, and we've got the horses to beat this team, and we're going to do it. And it might not be pretty, but I'm predicting a BYU win. Do you want me to give you a score?
Yeah,
are we at that point yet? Because I'm rolling now.
What do you got?
BYU wins this game 17 to 10.
17 to 10. I am close with you. I'm doing 16 to 13. And I'm predicting a last-minute victory for the Cougars. My heart won't be able to take it at 1 in the morning, but...
This game is definitely going to be decided in the fourth quarter.
So now, you and I have both been predicting a victory against Utah since we started predicting the season in the preseason.
But I almost flipped to a loss a couple weeks ago. You might remember.
Yes, you did.
During the show.
Yes.
But I just don't see this. I think the matchups here are right, and I don't think that what we saw last week is a good barometer for what we're going to see this
week. You know what? That's not true. 1 week when we predicted it in the offseason, we both predicted a loss in this game.
Well, hey, the past is in the past. I'm calling
it
a W.
That's right, it is. So Matt, let's go through the rest of the year based on these first two games and overreact to the LSU game. All right?
We're going to wildly overreact. Not too wildly, because we're still predicting a win against Utah.
That's right. So we both predict Utah to win. Wisconsin, I think it's safe to say we're both predicting a loss.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. Right. But yeah.
Utah State, they're not good, Matt. I'm predicting
a win. No, not worried about Utah State.
Boise State might be better than I thought they were going to be. Matt, I've been predicting us to win. You've been predicting us to lose. What about Boise?
I'm still saying loss.
I am switching to a loss, Matt. Mississippi State on the road. Again, they also may be better than I thought, but I was already thinking we're going to lose in Starkville. I continue to think that. Matt, what about you?
I think I've been calling this a win.
You have not. Are you switching?
No, I'm saying it's a loss.
You said in the preseason that it's a win, but the last few weeks you've been saying a loss.
I think what we're seeing now is that's probably a loss.
Yeah.
And that has as much to do with Mississippi State as it has to do with us.
Now, East Carolina, San Jose State, Fresno State, UNLV, and UMass. It's likely that all five of those opponents before we get to Hawaii are going to be outside of the top 100 in the FBS victories. What about Hawaii? They might not be totally terrible.
Jeez. There's a resounding endorsement.
So you got victories from East Carolina through Hawaii?
Sure do.
Me too. So we're now, you have kept your exact same from last week, 9-4. I have now downgraded to 9-4.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, this LSU game, guys, everybody just needs to calm down. I mean, this is basically what we thought was going to happen, except the extent to which the offense was unable to move the football was worse than we thought, right? But it's not, none of this is unfixable. We are probably about who we thought we were 2 weeks ago.
They are who we thought they were.
Let's go win some football games.
So Matt, best case scenario, we beat Utah and we beat Wisconsin in the next 2 weeks. Nobody cares about LSU after that, right?
Nope.
Worst case scenario, we're 1-3 going into that Utah State game. At that point, I mean, are you just going to avoid BYU Twitter? I mean, what are you going to do?
I don't know. I'll be honest. I stayed up. We got back to our hotel pretty late after the game Saturday night, and I stayed up just reading the meltdown and thinking to myself some of the things I've just said. Like, we all just need to calm down.
Well, I was fine. I told you this. I texted you this the next day. I was fine the entire game. I stayed off Twitter, and I was fine. Like you said, this is what I thought was going to happen. I thought we were going to get beat by a much superior team. And maybe worse than I thought, and I'm worried about the offense. But, you know, hard to gauge. But after I got on Twitter, I was ready to fire Detmer. Right? And then you step back and go, why have my emotions changed? Like, I watched this game. I've been watching football for 30-something years. I know what happened in this game. It was a terrible loss. We got out-coached and we got out-played. You move on, right? Like, yeah. We've had terrible losses before where we bounced back and played very well. You know, I don't know I'd have to look back at last year. I don't know if Satake had one quite this bad last year and bounced back. But you know, football teams do this all the time. Now, the flip side to that is sometimes the wheels come off too. And the difference is this year, if the wheels come off, we're still going to make a bowl game because of the schedule in the back half.
Here's the thing. If the wheels come off after losing to the top, you know, the at the time ranked 12th team in the country, if that is so demoralizing for your team that the wheels come off, you've got bigger problems.
Yeah, you're right.
And I don't think that's who we have. You know, these guys are invested. Yeah. These guys care about this stuff way more than any of us do.
Well, and LSU, Utah, and Wisconsin, they may be the three best teams we play all year. They may not be. We'll see where Boise State, Mississippi State land. But
gauntlet right now.
Oh, yeah. So, Matt, any parting words of wisdom?
Just win, baby.
Just win. Let's go. Let's take down Utah. End that stupid streak. Let's move on. Let's move on and get ready for Wisconsin and Provo.
That's right.
Right? All right. Well, this has been a podcast, Matt. You can find us at DeseretNewsDeck.com/podcast. You'll find this show and a few others. And follow us on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout. Facebook.com/RiseAndShout. Email RiseAndShoutPod@gmail.com. One word, RiseAndShoutPod@gmail.com. Thanks for downloading and listening, and we will catch you next week previewing the Wisconsin Badgers.
Go Cougars. Beat Utah.
Beat them. Climb on in the tweet bag and beat them.